What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Luke Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic or listening to us wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate that. We know you have a lot of options out there, and this show would not be possible without the support of our sponsors, My Patriot Supply. I mean, I'm telling you, if 2020 has done nothing, it is at least been an advertisement for getting yourself prepared. I remember people used to mock preppers and laugh at them as being a bunch of weirdos. Well, listen, who's laughing now? We've done a deal with My Patriot Supply to make it so that you can get $100 off of your 4-week supply of food. All you have to do is go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. It's our own little special website. You can check out what they have available there. They have emergency survival food, long-term, short-term, bulk food cans. They have survival items. They have cooking gear, power, lighting, stoves and fuel and water filtration. They've got everything that you need. You're better off being a day early than a week late on this. We've seen what's happened in 2020. I'd love to say that I think things are going to get better. Unfortunately, I really don't. So this is one of those situations where it pays to be prepared. So do yourself a favor, check out their website, go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and check out what My Patriot Supply has to offer you. So that aside, I'm really fascinated to talk to our guest, Ken Ami, about the transhuman agenda in Hollywood and all of the things that come from that. We've been watching movies play out, Ken, for years and years. Science fiction movies. Isn't that neat? Oh, look at Terminator. Oh, yeah, they're having robot wars and they're doing all these things. But that's set in the future. We're never going to see that in our lifetime. That might just be for Hollywood. They're trying to make money. But the older I get, the more I look back on the old movies that are predicting the future, it seems to me like there's a fair bit of predictive programming embedded in these movies from the 80s and 90s. And unfortunately, this dystopian reality that we thought might, you know, our great great grandchildren might experience, it looks like we might be walking into this. What say you on the predictive programming and the evilness of Hollywood?
First of all, I think it's hilarious. Your concept of old movies is 80s and 90s.
I mean, it's not old. I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
No, but I mean, we might as well be a million years away, right?
Right.
If 2020's done anything, it's to just take the wildest conspiracy theories you ever imagined, put them in a blender, hit go, and there you go. So form an orderly queue and apologize to all those people you've been calling crazy all these years, because
no kidding.
The nuttiest thing you can think about it's happening today. You know, it's happening tomorrow. It's, but I laughed at that also because I have just this week, past 2 weeks, been watching some actually old movies. Metropolis and The Creation of the Humanoids. And that's because I'm actually working on a documentary project with my buddy William Ramsey. So Metropolis and The Creation of the Humanoids, two absolutely unmatched movies till this day, I think, in their sophistication and commingling of all the ingredients that make for transhumanism. So being a big believer in defining terms before jumping into a discussion, maybe we could just set the table for understanding what is transhumanism.
Let's do it. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Give me your definition of transhumanism and who created, you know, who came up with this concept, and was it, you know, is this the evolution of the human spirit, or is this the devolution of the human spirit?
Transhumanism, it's almost inevitable that you'll find at least three ingredients: high tech, evolution, and occult. You'll at least find two, if not all three, in any anything to do with transhumanism. Now, Isaac Asimov hit the nail on the head long ago. He said, "I wonder if we will make robots so much like men and men so much like robots that eventually we'll lose the distinction altogether and have a combined culture. This may be best after all. Maybe humanity itself will die out as humanity and sort of melt into this machine culture."
Whoa.
Now, transhumanism is also AKA post-humanism, sometimes just futurism. And then there's organizations such as H+, meaning Humanity Plus. But by any other name, it is the view of, to whatever level, the combining of humanity and technology towards someone's desired end, right? Humanity re-imaged in our own image. So in other words, forget natural selection. Why should we be enslaved to a natural process? Why not take it into our own hands and make of it what we will? As a term itself, though, transhumanism comes from Julian Huxley, from a 1957 book called In New Bottles for New Wine. And incidentally, right there, just in the title, you know he's playing off of theology, because that's right out of the New Testament, right? So he says, "I believe in transhumanism. Once there are enough people who can truly say that, the human species will be on the threshold of a new kind of existence, as different from ours, as ours is from that of the Peking man. It will at last be consciously fulfilling its real destiny." And it's interesting to me, right there, you have theology, right there, you also have evolution, right? Peking man. And he claims to know what humanity's real destiny is. That to me is fascinating. Yeah. So he's got an idea of what it is. And so he's going to attempt to lead us in that direction, right?
Well, I don't trust the Huxleys, but... you know, so he might not be the perfect, he might not be the right guy to make the decision for where humanity should be going based on their ties to the, you know, establishment. But
exactly. So, but this is a window into the mindset is, hey, we know, we know better. We're just getting you to tag along.
Yeah.
And by the way, here we are definitely tagging along like the Pied Piper.
For sure.
No, yeah. No problem. No issue there. We're beyond the concept of a big brother kicking down your door and installing monitoring devices. We brought them into our homes ourselves.
Yeah. We've walked our Amazon Echoes right into our kitchen, plugged them in, put them there, and invited their surveillance state right into our homes, and actually even paid for it.
Now, I found this interesting. I'll just read another quote. And this is barely touched upon in a movie called Personal Shopper. "The central idea of spiritualism is the idea that there is a world beyond our world. And spiritualists try to give empirical proof of this world. In 1848, the Fox sisters heard rappings, and they interpreted these rappings as messages from deceased persons. And that, for them, was real proof of the existence of a higher world beyond our own. It's interesting that the Morissette code had been invented 2 years earlier. The spiritualists were always very close to the technological avant-garde.
Mm.
So I'm telling you, you cannot get away from high-tech, occultism, and evolution. It's always, at least two of those are always together, if not three.
It makes me think of the founding of Jet Propulsion Laboratory in NASA, and these guys, L. Ron Hubbard and Roger Molina and you know, the occultists that were building rockets. I would think rockets and scientists go well together. I would think rockets and maybe even politicians because they finance it, but rockets and occultists didn't really make that connection. But apparently there is one. Apparently they, like you said, they sort of, there's three components to this, and where you find one, you might find the other two as well. It's interesting.
Incidentally, speaking of evolution, I'm drinking out of my chimp cup. And also, just for you, I'm wearing my Darth Vader shirt.
Oh, thank you. That's great. Since
that is definitely transhumanism right there.
Well,
and
yeah.
It looks like that because this shirt's from the early 90s.
You know, I never even really put those two things together until you mentioned that. But Darth Vader is sort of the transhumanist, at least for me, the original transhumanist, right? That's a fascinating point.
Right, because Anakin Skywalker, and incidentally, Anakin would be the Aramaic form of a plural for Anak, the children of Anak, the Anakim from the Bible. He has his body, basically half of it is destroyed. And so now he has to live within this biomechanical suit. Yeah, he's definitely transhumanist. And I actually, in rewatching Metropolis this past week, I saw that it seemed to me the occult scientist is based on, or Darth Vader is based on that occult scientist, just the way he looks.
Wow.
His long black robe. And then also he lost a hand in one of his experiments.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But let me just give you sort of the way that I view transhumanism's roots through the years. And I'm just going to start back just a little bit, like in Genesis 2.
Okay.
Because there you have God forming Adam of the dust of the earth and breathing life into him, right? Okay. And then throughout history, through various cultures, Greeks and what have you, you have the creation of automata or mechanica, you know, sort of early attempts at robotics, you know, not robotics, the robotics in the way we would understand them. But definitely throughout history, there's been an attempt to make mechanical beings to whatever clunky level, but no doubt. Then in rabbinic Judaism, okay, so not biblical Judaism, in rabbinic Judaism, that is Judaism under the rabbinate, there developed a mysticism called Kabbalah. Now, in Kabbalism, you have at least the claim that through certain mystical practices, the rabbi would undergo an initiation, which would be to form a basic humanoid shape from mud and would bring it to life. This is called the golem.
Okay,
so what do you see there? Well, it's an attempt to emulate what God did in Genesis 2. It's the same thing. And incidentally, I always say there's a good way to try to be like God and there's a bad way, right? We should be like God in terms of holiness and grace and all that, but not in terms of trying to be God ourselves. We want to be like him in a good way. Right. I always say it's in terms of emulation, not in terms of usurpation.
Gotcha.
But that's what you see in Kabbalism. And the earliest source we can find about Golem is just that. It is strictly an initiation, and the second the being comes to life, it's sent back to the dust whence it came. And then later developments are that this being was basically one that could perform certain tasks, sometimes forbidden to be used for menial tasks. Sometimes that's the whole purpose of the story. I mean, you have a lot of folklore developing. Mm-hmm. I wrote a whole book on this called The Golden Golem Goal. Try to say that five times fast.
Yeah, no kidding. By the way, you've got a ton of books available on Amazon, and your website is truefreethinker.com. If people want, I will encourage people to go check it out. There's a lot of information there. There's a whole lot. If you want to, I mean, we're not going to be able to do it justice in an hour doing this, but people that want to take a deep dive, I really suggest they check out your website, maybe go to Amazon and see the variety of books that are available. I mean, listen, if you're looking for something interesting to read, Ken has written it and it's available for sale. So please support his work as much as you can.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. But the Golden Golem Goal is subtitled From Organism to Transhumanism, because that's what I ended up writing about, is this progression where we go from what God did to an attempt to emulate that through the various stories about Golem. And in my book, I actually ended up contributing some folklore of my own. There's a whole chapter that's just the story I made up that's fiction. And that was a lot of fun to write, as well as you know, I tried to emphasize some of the occult aspects. Now, we jump ahead quite a ways to stories like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is subtitled what? I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you remember?
Oh, I knew it at one time, but I can't. You'll say it and then I'll... Yep.
Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus.
Oh, I didn't know that was I was thinking of something else. The Modern Prometheus. Oh, that's I didn't realize that was the subtitle for it. Yep.
So that might raise a lot of red flags for you, right? Prometheus, the Greek version of a roughly Satan-like tale of a Titan that rebels against Zeus and giving humanity fire and actually other technologies, right? Mm-hmm. That's one thing what I was thinking about when you talked about rocketry and the occult is like, we think of technology as gadgets, but fire is a technology, right?
Yeah, of course.
A piece of wood you can use to pound something with, that's a technology. And so Prometheus gives technologies to humanity against the will of Zeus, and then he's punished for it, you know. So a basic Satan tale in essence. And so that's Mary Shelley's book. Why the Modern Prometheus? Okay, well, in Greek mythology, there's two Prometheus characters, but one of them is credited for having created humanity. So there you have Victor Frankenstein. And what is he doing? In this case, he's not taking dirt, but he is taking corpses and mashing them together to bring them to life. It's your basic Genesis 2 Golem concept. It's just slightly more high tech.
Interesting.
Yeah. In fact, I recently watched one of the, 57 versions of the Frankenstein movie.
Yeah.
I think it was called like The True Story of, even though it was extremely far from the original book. But in any case, at one point, Frankenstein's monster says, "We are many." Right? Because, he's a combination of different people. So whoever wrote that knew what they were talking about in terms of that. That was right out of the mouth of the demoniac answer to Jesus, what is your name? We are many. Well, that's what they saw. And actually, Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus is an extremely theologically and occultically heavy book.
Yeah.
Just growing up watching the Frankenstein movies, I thought, okay, it's about a rampaging monster, but it's very theological and very occultic. No question about it.
And I felt like the Ridley Scott movie Prometheus was very occultic as well. And it had some hardcore storylines going through that. I mean, it was billed as a science fiction movie, but there was a little, it was a relatively deep movie if you want to dig into it.
See, you're going to force me to sound like a total PR salesman of a nerd. I wrote a book about that, but
oh, did you really?
You write so many books, it's like you have to. Yeah, it's called A Worldview Review of the Alien and Predator Franchise, and Predator Mythos Franchise.
Oh, and that is right up my alley.
I always joke that the research for that book was watching like 13 movies. Right. And yeah, it was, but it was one of those projects that was a lot of fun, but also just extremely tedious, because for every single movie, I looked up if the director, the scriptwriter, any of the actors, anybody had given interviews. And then since I'm not interested in the cinematography, the acting, I could care less about that stuff. I'm interested in the worldview philosophy behind it, right? Mm-hmm. So I would have to read a number of articles just to maybe pull out one single quote I could use. So it was a tremendous amount of research, but it was really rewarding too. So yeah, that covers every Alien and Predator movie, and also because they end up crossing over, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's funny that when you watch these movies, if you just watch a science fiction movie as a casual observer, you know, you get one layer. But if you watch it again the second time, or somebody tells you, you should really watch this movie, but look for the themes that are running through it and everything, it's like watching a whole different movie.
Yeah.
And same with the Star Wars franchise. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, George Lucas went to town on borrowing from, you know, Greek and Roman legends and intertwining that. That's why it seemed like such a familiar tale to so many people. It's like, oh yeah, I get this, you know, the hero's journey and all this stuff. And it's like, well, that's not entirely new. He did a great job with it, of course, by blending it all together. But those storylines are a bit recycled. You know, they exist in other writings and another, even biblical too.
But what really annoys me about the way people speak of Star Wars is that it's generally referred to as an epic tale about good and evil. Okay, but it really cannot be within the mythos itself, because there is no God, right? There's just an impersonal force. Mm-hmm. And so there can't really be a real good and a real evil. There's just will to power. It's literally a tale about accessing force and bending it towards your will. So the Jedi's claim that the Sith are evil and the Jedi are good. Well, the Sith claim the Jedi are evil and the Sith are good. And nobody can actually really absolutely say either way. It's just the hero's the hero because they win. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
It's just a total full forced will to power. That's all it really is.
Fascinating.
And actually, if you remember the first, I don't know, I haven't kept up with the last 7 Star Wars movies or whatever they are.
You're not missing a whole lot. The first,
one that was released, right? The first one was released. You remember one of the guys on the space, what is that?
Death Star.
You know, that Star. Yeah. He tells Vader that I'm not afraid of your sorcerer's ways,
right before he gets choked out.
But that just shows a window into how they were viewing Vader, right?
Yeah.
He's some kind of sorcerer. There you have occultism on top of it.
Yeah, for sure. Good point.
So then,
I always liked when they went to, in the follow-up in Empire Strikes Back, when Luke Skywalker was training with Yoda in the jungle, and he sees the cave and he's about to go in the cave, and he's asked Yoda, what's in there? And Yoda's response is, only what you take with you. And I was like, oh shit, that is a really deep thought right there. It is, you know, you're going in to face this thing and it's all in your head. It's what you've brought to this, what you've brought to this battle yourself, what's inside yourself. I always thought that was a deep point that was kind of, well, I wouldn't say overlooked. I guess coming from Yoda, it just seems a little bit smarter than everybody else.
Well, they say, you know, Yoda is supposed to be the most intelligent being in the universe, but you need the GED, you know. GED, need I.
Yeah, no kidding.
But,
huh?
But that also makes me think that perhaps there was a veiled reference to Plato's allegory of the cave.
For sure.
Because then Luke is going to go in there and he's going to see projections, essentially. And okay, here we go again in my book, A Worldview Review of Stephen King's It. Mm-hmm. Subtitled, get this, The Mystical, Mysterious, and Metaphysical in the Novel, Miniseries, and Movies. I have a whole chapter on the allegory of the cave in relation to how it's basically a modern-day movie theater.
It's yeah,
virtually the same thing. Yeah,
it is. It's everybody sitting, looking in one direction. Images are projected on there. You get this false sense of reality, and you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Yeah, for sure it is.
Except that now we're paying $13 for a box of popcorn, you know.
That's true.
But what's interesting, too, is in the allegory, if anyone were to escape the cave and tell other people, you know, they would come back and tell them about the real world, they wouldn't believe it.
Right.
Just like if you and I say, hey, there's this symbolism in these movies. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want to believe it, or they don't want to bother with it very often. I get that a lot. It's just a movie. It's like, do you have any idea how much time was put into writing and editing and philosophizing to end up with a script that was approved and funded? And then all this, the stage settings and the director and everybody to just a movie? It's just a movie? You have no idea what goes on behind the scenes? I mean, you got to be kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a movie inside the movie, typically with these bigger, you know, with these more well thought out productions. There's a lot. I mean, you watch it as a kid, you get one version of the movie. You watch it when you're a little bit older, you see things that you missed as a kid. You watch it as an adult, you see even more mm-hmm. things. And if you watch it now, like if I go back and watch some of these movies that I loved as a kid, not to say that I have the understanding of the occult that you do, but from the limited amount that I do know, I wind up seeing these movies with different eyes. You know, I catch things that I had watched the movie. I've watched the movie five times before and never noticed this one thing. Then there's a one little comment and I go, oh my God, they're talking about something totally different. Yeah. There's another movie playing inside this movie and nobody's seen, or few people are seeing it. But like you said, that's not accidental. That's thought out. That's scripted. That's written. And now when you dig into the Stanley Kubrick films and you go deep into that, then you realize that, I mean, his level of detail to what the, you know, the clock and the carpet patterns and the where they were and what shirt he's wearing and everything had a place. Everything had a purpose. And it could be exhausting to watch those. I mean, to watch the movies with that, you know, like with a pen and paper, you're taking notes. There's a lot to unpack there. I know you and Jay Dyer have had these conversations before about.
Here's let's see. Oh, I think you can't see it because of the background I chose, but I just happen to have a clipboard right next to me with tons of notes that I took from watching the movies I mentioned, because we're working on a documentary. So that's all it is notes.
Yeah.
So anyhow, jumping to Metropolis. Mm-hmm. You can find the 2.5-hour version on YouTube, which is great because that gets you close to the – actually, it was a book. It was a book written by the director's wife, and then they started working on the movie script actually as she was still writing the book. But it is about a city called Metropolis, which the main tower, the main building of which is called the New Tower of Babel. Right, straight up. And so it's got a lot of really fascinating elements. There's a style, the prophetess, okay, let me back up. There's obviously some influence from H.G. Wells' Time Machine, because you have basically two societies coexisting, one underground, one above ground. Underground is all the high tech, just like in Time Machine, with the Morlocks and the Eloi. The Eloi were very childlike. The Morlocks did all the high-tech work. And so you have that. You have the workers underneath listening to this woman, Maria, obviously from Mary, Jesus' mother. They think of her as a saint, and she's predicting the coming of a mediator. And their lives are very treacherous, of course, working 10-hour shifts in this kind of machinery. In fact, with one of the machines has a they call it a heart machine, the heart of the city, essentially. It's about to explode because it's having some kind of problem. It's envisaged as Moloch, one of the false gods mentioned in the Bible. I don't want to get into too many details because the story is a bit complex, but basically the son of the main ruler of Metropolis goes down into the worker city because he's a Moses-like figure wanting to get in touch with his brothers. And when he sees this machine about to blow and some of the workers being killed and hurt by it, by the explosions, that's what he sees all of a sudden. An image of what he yells out, Moloch, you know, that's what he's seeing. And it makes sense because basically the workers are being sacrificed to the high tech, to the machines that make life above ground for the higher classes very enjoyable, you know, not having to bother with the riffraff, the hoi polloi beneath the ground.
I mean, if that's not a total metaphor for what we're seeing right now in our society, what is? I mean, that is.
And it's it gets deeper still because basically you have you can actually see it in my background right here. Mm-hmm. That's the Metropolis android.
Okay.
And what's this? A gigantic upside down pentagram?
Yeah. Wow. Wonder why they chose that.
The scientist who built that, and that's his laboratory with that giant upside-down pentagram, he knows the ruler of Metropolis, you know, and he is made to make that robot look like that Saint Maria because he wants to sow discord amongst the workers because they're obviously planning to rebel against him. So it's a total case of Ordo Ab Kahl, right? He's gonna allow chaos underground amongst the workers to justify any means he's gonna take to get control over them. So he's gonna that's straight up. And so
when these guys, I mean, in your opinion, when they write something like this, where they where they've written in the upside down pentagram and everything, and are they writing this because this is a future that they want to see, or are they writing this because this is a warning about the future where these maniacs want to take us?
In my mind, that's a virtually impossible question to answer.
Okay.
Because for one, if they don't tell us their motivation, we can only guess. And if they do tell us, we have to decide whether we can believe them or not.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, you had the other Huxley writing Brave New World, and he calls it a cautionary tale rather than like a roadmap, you know?
Right.
So to me, that's...
You wouldn't believe them if they told you anyway.
Yeah, so it's essentially a non-issue for me. All I can do is say, hey, this is what I've noticed. And yeah, here's the things they've said. And then whether you believe them or not, that's a separate issue. But so this was, again, the director and his wife writing, his wife writing the book, the director making the movie. And they were living in Germany in the very, very early days of Nazism, if that makes a difference. You know, I don't know what they knew or didn't know, what they were into or weren't. I have no idea. But I do understand that the book actually contains a lot more occult elements than the movie does. So he ends up, okay, this is 1927 when the movie came out. Okay, it's so old that it's a silent film. They didn't even have the high tech to sync the film with the audio, right? But in that era, they're conceiving of an android that could then be made to look exactly like a human being, because that's what ends up happening. They make her look like the saint. And then she just goes buck wild, you know. You have the scenes of her literally being correlated to the Whore of Babylon from Revelation in the Bible. Straight up, just like that. And she even comes out in the Baphomet pose of as above, so below. Mm-hmm. Right arm pointing up, left arm pointing down. She makes that sign. And the men and the, you know, the higher up in the clubs are just losing their minds over her. They're like beating each other up, shooting each other, committing suicide, literally going nuts. And now that imagery has been picked up by a lot of people in pop culture. Madonna did that. She's got the video where men are just men in tuxedos, just like in the movie, just doting all over her, giving her jewelry. And there's it's going up and down the steps where she's performing, just like in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then you have Freddie Mercury from Queen in the video for Radio Gaga. He's depicted with the circles of light going up and down exactly the way that happened when the robot was made into Maria. And then Lady Gaga picked up on that. That's why she calls herself Lady Gaga. It's after that horrible song, Radio Gaga.
Yeah.
And she also plays the part of the robot with Metropolis. A lot of Beyonce has done that. So many have done that. And well, since that's what they're doing, they are depicting themselves for whatever reason as the Whore of Babylon from the Bible. That's what they're doing, if you're looking at the context in which they're doing it. And so eventually what you have is a robot that looks like a human sowing discord. And then, you know, okay, there's a lot more details to the movie, but that's the basic storyline. Is in a time when, there's even a FaceTime in that movie. I just posted a clip from it on my Twitter where, the master of Metropolis, as they call him, he's literally doing FaceTime with his main worker guy underground. Wow. So again, all these super high-tech ideas, and when the movie wasn't even high-tech enough to have the sound attached to it.
Wow, that's crazy. And,
yeah, I picked up a lot from watching it this time, a lot of influence. So like to me, the main foreman underground for the workers was named Grot. So I thought, okay, to me that's the day the earth stood still, right? Grot is the main robot.
This was before the day the earth stood still, right? Then if they'd done this, had to have been a couple years before, 40 to 10 years before.
Yeah, I don't recall. Let me see. They remade the day the earth stood still.
Yeah.
And found it interesting that, there was a marked difference between the two versions of the movie. So the original one is 1951.
Okay.
So just over two decades after Metropolis. I don't want to deviate into this. This would be more like alien territory. Gotcha. But in the original Earth, the day the Earth stood still. Now, what the script writer said is that there's a scene where Klaatu gets shot, right? And then Grot is about to annihilate all the soldiers, and Klaatu urges him not to. And the scriptwriter said that what he was doing there is playing off of the Father and Son and Holy Spirit, with Klaatu playing the part of the Son, like Jesus being injured, and then Grot playing the part of the Father and healing Klaatu through the power of the Holy Spirit. That's what the script writer said. It's one of those things I would have never even imagined watching that movie. You know, which just shows you never know what's the intention behind the scenes. I would have never imagined that. Or for instance, you were of Clive Barker, the author. Okay. So he says, the movie Nightbreed is about his homosexuality. It's like, okay, thinking about it, then I could totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
because it's a movie about outcasts and how they're persecuted and all that. And then he says Hellraiser is about his fascination with S&M, sadomasochism, you know. That might be slightly more obvious just because of the clothing that the Cenobites wear. But again, you wouldn't necessarily know this stuff unless it was revealed. Or another good one, Secret Window, with Johnny Depp, a Stephen King story. In a certain part of the movie, the camera goes right through a mirror. And in the commentary, the director said, well, that shows you that from that point on in the movie, we're viewing things from the point of view of the protagonist. It's like, wow, I just thought it was a cool camera trick.
Right.
Thunk That's it, fascinating. You know? But anyhow, just very quickly, The Day the Earth Stood Still is very much a Jesus tale, in that the message that Klaatu came down to Earth to bring is, you humans are messing up. This is my first coming, and I'm going to be coming back. You better straighten up, basically.
Interesting.
Whereas the second movie, you can see how it was very secularized, because Klaatu comes down and he says, you humans are messing up. This is my first coming, but yeah, you're not so bad after all. Never mind. Everything's cool. That was, that was pretty much it. So the other movie I wanted to mention, and I know maybe we're going into movies a little bit more than you wanted to.
This is great.
But there's a reason why we can speak of real life transhumanism and all kinds of mind control issues in relation to movies, because that's where this stuff is being openly displayed. I mean, you could barely watch any science fiction movie anymore without it being straight up transhumanist. Straight up. And you can't get away from it anymore. That's what they are. Yeah. Now, in... let's see. Philip K. Dick wrote a book called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, right?
Yes.
That was made into the movie called Blade Runner.
Correct.
However, in, let's see, okay.
And the date for Blade Runner has already come and gone in real life. I think it was set in 2019. Is that correct? Uh-huh. The movie made it.
I don't recall, but Metropolis is set in 2026.
Oh boy. We got that to look forward to.
Whatever that means.
If we make it.
Yeah.
At the rate things are going, we'll see.
So this movie called The Creation of the Humanoids is from 1962, 6 years before Philip K. Dick's book. And it's based on a book called The Humanoids by Jack Williamson from 1954. So the book and movie predate Philip K. Dick. And I'm only mentioning that because Blade Runner is a classic, mostly due to the concept of an android that could be made so much like a human, it itself wouldn't even know that it's an android.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Except that was already 6 years before that. That was already in the movie, The Creation of the Humanoids. Now, this movie, to my mind, is still unmatched in its sophistication. And guess what? It combines high tech, because you have robots and you also have androids whom they call humanoids. And maybe, okay, so robot is just a basic mechanical thing that could be a clunky shape. But an android is an anthropomorphic robot. So it's a robot that looks like a human to whatever extent. It's humanoid. So in this case, they're calling them humanoids. And what ends up happening is human population is on the decline. That's why they're having to create so many robots. And then they end up also creating humanoids, because some people felt more comfortable working with robots that look like humans. Whereas there's what's known in the movie as the Order of the Flesh and Blood, And they're actually against the humanoids because they don't feel like robots should look like humans. They should look like clunky devices because that's what they are. Let's not mix the two. But meanwhile, people are actually doing... So in the movie, marriage is called contracting. And being in rapport, that means that human beings are getting married to androids.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah. So that's happening.
And wake up, Japan. You guys are first. You guys are into all the robot stuff. You'd be marrying your robots before too long.
So the Order of the Flesh and Blood discovered that the humanoids are creating their own theology.
Oh, and, interesting. Yeah.
So every now and then, the robots and the humanoids have to go to a certain building where no human is allowed to enter, and that's where they go recharge their batteries, okay? Mm-hmm. And they get downloads of information as well. And so they start referring to that as the temple.
Yeah.
And they start referring to the main computer as the father mother.
So here comes theology into it.
There go theology and also a mixing of the genders,
mm-hmm.
which incidentally, androgyny and the concept of a hermaphrodite, that is deeply occultic. That is,
it seems to be making an appearance more and more in our culture. Yeah. Deep push for that.
And here we go again. I wrote a book called The Occult Roots of Post-Genderism and the History of Changes to Psychiatry and Psychology, just pointing out that you can look in 100 different classic occult texts and it's going to be right there. It's going to be there. Androgyny and hermaphroditism, it's all over.
It's Baphomet is that, yeah, as well.
Exactly. Yeah? Exactly. Yeah. So then what ends up happening is what the robots, what the androids, you know, the humanoids start doing is whenever a human being dies, they try to collect the corpse quickly and they turn it into a humanoid.
Okay.
So there you have a little Frankenstein, mm-hmm. and definitely occultism because they refer to it as resurrection.
Oh,
when
boy.
A human being dies and they're brought back with some of their memories intact, but they're actually an android and they don't know it.
Boy, and that opens up a big can of worms for us too. I mean, how much, you know, what are we, Graham Hancock has described us as a species with amnesia. Mm. And if we want to get super deep into this, I mean, it's how do we know that we weren't reborn from something else? I mean, how would we know?
You know, that's interesting because part of the way they punish the crimes in this movie is by deleting, say, oh, okay, your sentence is you're going to lose a year's worth of memory.
Oh, interesting.
And then also what happens is they found when they first tried to create these humanoids that didn't know they were humanoids, they it was so shocking to them, they ceased to function. So what they did is they just removed the memory of the time of their death. So that they just could come back and be like, oh, hey, what happened? Oh, I don't know. I guess I passed out or whatever.
Interesting.
So, yeah. It's all under the big top.
Yeah.
And so anyhow, by the end of the movie, there's a great plot twist and, you know, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen this, since 1962, you might not get around to it. So don't blame me. One of the main guys in the Order of the Flesh and Blood finds out that he is a humanoid and he's absolutely shocked, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, what ends up happening is one of the scientists figures out a way to have robots, again, humanoids, so robot in a human body, essentially, how to make them reproduce.
Interesting.
And so he says, you're going to be viewed as a deity. You are now immortal. You know, all this stuff is in there just like that.
Wow.
And then you do have a scene with one of the androids talking about very clearly in evolutionary terms about how basically, you know, robots are here and you shouldn't fear us, because just like other species have gone extinct, maybe humanity will go extinct. Even though we're not sure that we're the next step in evolution, that's just how it goes, basically. So you have evolution there, you have theology, you have occultism, you have a high tech. And incidentally, I view the movie Automata as basically kind of watered down version of this movie. And in that one as well, you have robots becoming self-aware and starting to do what was forbidden, which is to repair themselves and make changes to themselves. And one of them is asked about what's happening, because in that movie also humanity's declining. And it's just a very straight up existential evolutionary thing, where, which is like, look, nobody made what's known as strong artificial intelligence happen. It just happened, just like you happened. You humans just happened. Now we are just happening, and we're the next phase, and that's all there is to it. You know,
it's interesting,
right? If stuff just happens all by itself, then we just happened all by ourselves, and you're going to go extinct, and that'll be it, and then we'll be around.
We've got these maniacs running our world that are all, maybe I shouldn't say all, but there's definitely a eugenics tilt to them. They see themselves as higher up the totem pole than we are. They see the rest of us as taking up a lot of space on their planet. They would like us to go away. They would like us to be replaced by robots. Is transhumanism and eugenics interchangeable?
I would say absolutely so, in terms of what I touched upon already, which is that if they're viewing evolution as sort of accidents, right, random chance, stuff just happening, then why be enslaved to that? Why be enslaved to a natural process? Why not take that into our own hands and remake humanity in our own image? So remember what Isaac Asimov said, is that we're not only making machines more like humans, we're making humans more like machines. Mm-hmm. Right? I just saw a hilarious meme of Bigfoot walking across a city park and nobody's noticing him because they're all looking down at their devices, you know?
I saw that too.
Yeah, that was a riot.
That sums up our current culture right now. Everybody has been looking for Bigfoot and he could be walking through the mall right now. If he had a mask on, no one would know it was him, and nobody would be paying attention. They'd be looking at their phones. I've seen video of like surveillance from inside a mall of a lady that's on her phone walking and walks right into the fountain.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. we have embraced this transhumanist. Of course, most of us don't see it as transhuman. We just see it as the evolution of technology, of gadgets and things like that. Hey, this is going to make my world a little bit better. Give me the, you know, they always phrase it that way. It's going to give you the ability to communicate with people, or FaceTime, and you can have, or Skype like we're doing right now. I mean, there's benefits to improving technology.
Right.
But you got to make sure that the people in charge of it aren't a bunch of maniacs, which of course we know that a lot of the people running our world, they are. And so I guess it depends whose hands this the development of this technology is in.
And see, that's part of what makes this issue an extremely complicated one.
Yeah.
And it is extremely complicated, confusing, and fascinating all at once. So, for instance, J.P. Morgan once said that there's two reasons for what a man does. There's a good reason and there's a real reason.
Mm.
And so a lot of these main well-known guys in transhumanism, by any other name, what they do is they keep their tabs on what's going on. And they're sometimes involved in fields of prosthetics and all sorts of implants to help people who are deaf and blind and have lost limbs, right? And we already have artificial hips and hearts and all kinds of things. And then they'll co-opt them.
Mm.
Okay, so now you have someone like Elon Musk telling us that with artificial intelligence, we're summoning a demon, quote unquote. but saying, well, you know, in order to compete with AI, we're going to have to become cyborgs. So it's like this ultimate catch 22. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, of course, the benefits of technology are unquestionable, but then you have to balance that out with just how far will any of us allow it to go, if we even have an option, and to what level. I mean, you have people right now who are, okay, let me put it this way, in the mid to late 80s, I knew a guy who said he was ready to plug his brain into a computer. Now, I don't know if you can contextually remember the mid to late 80s, but that was an extremely advanced thing to say. Okay, yeah. Back then, computers were like, what would I ever do with one? You know,
yeah, it was 84. I think the Mac came out, right? The Macintosh, and it was a rectangular thing about the size of a portable heater or something, and it said hello written in cursive, and you could design a shoe and all, and but it was relatively primitive back then.
Yeah, I remember Apple IIs when I was in junior high school. The green letters, and you had to write an entire program just to get a word to blink. And in class, actually, one day I accidentally kicked the power strip where you like 20 computers were plugged in. That's it. There was no such thing as save,
right?
Or auto save. Okay.
Right.
But anyhow, so that was an extremely advanced thing for him to have said. And no surprise, he was also into the occult. So there are people very ready to go as cyborgian as they can possibly go. And there are people who need technology just to live their everyday lives. And I mean, in terms of physical issues, mental issues. And then there's a lot of us in between who have to figure out, well, I have metal fillings in my teeth. Maybe I have an artificial knee or hip. How far am I? Are we going to be taken? For instance, one of my current concerns is, will they roll out a mandatory COVID vaccine?
Yeah,
that's to me
a lot of us have
terrifying, because part of me, of course, I want to make sure everyone's healthy and happy. I don't want to spread anything. Okay, I think that's pretty common to anybody. But what is in that vaccine? What will it do today? What will it do 10 years from now? That's the concerning part. Yeah. And it'll be mandatory. So what happens if I can't go back to my job site, or I can't go into a store to buy something unless I can prove I've had it and all this stuff? That's where it becomes incredibly challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a topic. It's the hot topic right now. Is it going to have nanotechnology? You see the patent where they talk about how it would connect through, you know, to cashless society and identification. I mean, and of course, like everything, it'll be sold as a benefit. It'll be, isn't this great? Or you're helping, you're not going to kill grandma. You're going to do X, Y, and Z because of this, and never discussing the fact that, you know, once those things are in you, there's no guarantee you can get it out of you. And you also have to wonder about the source, who's in charge of it. I mean, I'm no fan of Bill Gates. I wouldn't trust him to inject me with anything. So, so my question is, if it is filled with nanotech or a variety of other things, what's the plan? Forced? Are they're forcing to take us? I understand if the option is, do you want to upgrade your body or your mind to this next thing? And we're starting to hear in popular culture and pop songs and things, not everybody's coming to the future with us. You know, that there's that term. So what do they know? What do they know? What are they talking about? They're not talking about what we think they're talking about. I get the feeling. I get the feeling there's an occult component to this, that when not everybody's coming to the future, that is more of a threat to us than it is a statement of fact.
I wouldn't be surprised if It would be a again back to the time machine in Metropolis, two culture solution, right? So I write extremely little fiction, just barely any, but I did write one story called "I Did," with "did" referring to dissociative identity disorder. I did, or on the splitting of the pineal gland, that's what it's called. And part of the story is that there are people who absolutely refuse to have anything to do with high tech. Mm-hmm. But what ends up happening is that it's pointed out, they don't recognize that nanobots they're in the water, they're in the rain, they're in the ground now, and due to the rain, so it's in their plants, it's in the food, it's in everything. There's just no getting away from it. You won't be able to get away from it as much as you want to. It's kind of like if you're gluten sensitive, you start recognizing, man, it's in everything. Because even if I want to eat beef, then the cows were fed grain. So there you go. I mean, and where'd the grain come from? Well, it got sprayed by Monsanto. And there's that. You know, there's just, I'm not sure that there's any getting away from it if it's going to come down sort of ubiquitously, you know, like a pan vaccine, you know, everybody vaccinated, whether it's through a needle in your arm or whether it's because it's in the water or in our food.
Yeah. It's a real fear. We're, you know, right now what we're doing is we're all trying to dodge and pretend like we're hiding from a virus, you know, which seems like, a theater of the absurd, you know, people with masks and, you know, I think I've said that if the government told us tomorrow that everybody has, that the virus likes to hang at around 4 feet high, that everybody needs to get down on their knees and crawl, that you would see people crawling into Walmart, you know, just mindlessly following the thing. So look, if we're going to try and hide from a virus, we can try and hide from gluten. We can try and hide from glyphosate, or nanotechnology. But like you said, it's going to be in everything. So how do we deal with it? How does our body respond to that? How do three generations from now, our great grandchildren, are they predisposed to incorporating this technology into themselves? Could they not live without it? The repercussions of where this is going, like you said, it's very deep. I mean, it causes you to think about a lot of things. Or is the plan, we're just going to take out 90% of humanity, right, like they've talked about wanting to do? So I fear this this transhumanist agenda. I fear it because I don't understand it fully, I think, probably at its core. But I also fear it because the people pushing it are people that I don't trust. If it came from a nice people, you know, group of people that I felt had the best interest of humanity at heart, I would be more inclined to, you know, be willing to hear what they have to say about it. But when I hear Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Gates, Elon Musk's and Bezos's of the world, and guys, I feel like, I don't know if I can necessarily just take your word for it that this is going to make me a better person. It's going to make me a more important part of this whole machine. There's a problem with credibility with a lot of these people pushing the transhumanist agenda. It'd be nicer if it came from you. It'd be like an explanation as to how this thing could improve society, and I might be more inclined to fall in line if it came from a trusted source. But it seems like the least trustworthy people on the planet have this plan for all of us, and they get this big smile. Like every time you see Bill Gates talking about how it's going to hurt a lot of people, he's like, yeah, exactly. He's doing that whole thing. He can barely contain himself. Exactly. You can barely contain his joy at all of this. And it makes me very fearful about the future. But like I said, and part of it is because I don't have a deep enough understanding of it to know, hey, maybe this is good. It's hard to argue with a guy that gets his arm blown off in the war, comes back and gets himself a new arm.
Right.
Hey, so that's a good thing, right? But like you said, where's that line?
Right. And it makes it very subjective. Where's that line for you whose body is non-functioning, but your brain is like a Stephen Hawking?
Yeah.
And where's that line for me who can do most things just fine? Thank you very much. I might just want to upload in my memory or learning capabilities. But, you know, we talked about transhumanism in the terms of what those who combine high tech with theology and or occultism and evolution. But for instance, I could say I'm a transhumanist because I certainly look forward to transcending this human body and being resurrected in Jesus' name. Amen. You know,
right.
But the issue is, okay, yes, definitely. But what in the meanwhile, right? In the meanwhile, what concerns me is not just the issues you noted, which are perfectly viable, but the snowball slippery slope effect. Mm-hmm. So that, for instance, we're going to put out this video on YouTube, and we both of us know that YouTube is a company no one should have anything to do with.
Right.
Well, I mean, actually, it's owned by Google. So there you go. It gets even worse. Mm-hmm. Or Twitter and Facebook, right? And yet, there we are. We're still on those because they offer a benefit to us, at least in the momentary. And so I'm already seeing just little windows into what a different world could be like. So you mentioned crawling. That was hilarious. Yeah. Crawling around in the Walmart, on thy belly you shall go.
Yeah.
You know, crawling into Walmart where when you do the self-checkout, they're already asking you, are you going to pay with cash or card? Because you can't use these machines to pay with cash. So that's already starting. When I go to Costco, I'm not even allowed through the door unless I show my little card, you know, and they have my information. So you're already seeing little windows into a very different world, a very different world that, incidentally, we have already seen in tons of sci-fi movies. And so that's why we seem to end up talking so much about them. But that's the issue for me. For a long time, it was, will the future be Orwell's 1984 or Huxley's Brave New World, right? Mm. The main difference is, will it be militant, like I said before, with Big Brother kicking down your door? Well, apparently not, because we're doing it all ourselves. We're allowing it to be done to us and through us, and we're enjoying the ride meanwhile, because there's so many great benefits, like you and I having this discussion live.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's one of the difficult things for me, is just going along for this ride, and man, the ride is fun, and there's all these great things coming out of it, and next thing you know, well, what will be the next thing you know? What will be the next thing we'll accept? And where will it lead us?
Yeah.
You know, who's to say? But that's one of my concerns, is the snowball is just gaining momentum and we're just having fun because it goes around and around. We're going, yay, this is fun.
Yeah.
But what's at the bottom of the hill when it all collapses?
Yeah. And I think a lot of us got a taste of this over the last two decades or so, where it's like, well, you've got free email. And you've got Facebook is free and Twitter is free. Look at this. All this stuff is free. Isn't this great? But there's a catch. It isn't technically free. They're taking your information. They're taking the data. There is a price that we pay. Is the price worth it? Not to go Madeleine Albright. Is the price worth it? The 500,000 dead Iraqi children. It depends on who you are. To psychopathic maniacs like Madeleine Albright, that price is worth it. To someone like us, we go, well, I like free email, but isn't it weird that I feel like I get ads for the stuff that I just typed in my email? Well, that's the trade-off. You exchange a little bit of privacy for a service that is billed as free, and yet your information, you are the product, you are the price that you pay.
Just this past week, I was discussing a certain well-known person via Gmail. So that's Google. Mm-hmm. The second I was done with that discussion through email, I pulled up my Twitter page, and who popped up in the recommended follow list? This certain person.
Wow.
Just like that. So Google and Twitter, They're apparently talking to each other somehow through their little cyber spiders.
Oh my God, that's crazy. Well, I'll tell you what, this conversation, the next time we have this conversation, I want to get into MK Ultra. I want to get into all this stuff, but we're going to leave it here for now. That's Ken Ami. You can find him at truefreethinker.com. Amazon, I'll put the links to his okay, pages there. That. People can check it out. Look, we've got to support each other in the alternative research community. Nobody's getting rich writing books. I've written books. You've written books. I mean, it's something you do because you're passionate about it. If revenue comes from it, that's great. So if people can help out and support Ken's work, you're going to find something you like there. I'll tell you that much, because I've gone to his Amazon page and there's a lot there. So everybody check that out. Ken, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Is there anywhere else where people can find you, find your work, social media, any place like that?
Yes, but just go to True Free Thinker, and I made it user-friendly. You can find all that stuff there.
Cool.
That keeps it simple.
I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's been a pleasure for me too. Everybody check out his stuff. Oh, and by the way, share this video, share this podcast wherever you can. As we're talking about transhumanism, you know that these transhumanist maniacs running the social media companies aren't going to help us get this message out. So it's up to you to share it and follow our work and buy the books and do all that stuff. Thanks, Ken, so much.
Thank you too, and your audience.
To get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.